friends. Welcome to Ask Dr. Julie Hanks podcast. I'm so glad you're here. In each episode, I coach a listener through a tough question about mental health, personal growth, family relationships, or faith journeys. My goal is to help you think, feel, or do something differently to improve your life because you listen to this podcast. I want you to step into your power and create a life you love. Let's get started. So we're going to do something a little different today on the podcast. Usually we do the Ask Dr. Julie Hanks a question, but I have some amazing guests that I'm going to interview and ask a lot of questions to. Welcome to Jill Duggar and Derek Dillard.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. So happy to have you. I have been devouring your book. I have loved it, and it just resonates. I watched your show when you were, you know, younger, and have watched the family drama play out, you know, publicly. And I just, first of all, want to say how much I love the book and how graceful you are in telling your story, and how generous you are to all parties involved. So I don't know that I would have been as generous as you. So. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
In the first few chapters of your book, you talk a lot about little Jilly Muffin. I get that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And she was taught that her body as a female was responsible for, like, protecting men from sexual thoughts. If you could go back and talk to that little Jilly Muffin who received those messages about maybe that her body was bad or she needed to be covered up, what do you wish you could tell her?
Yeah, I think that ultimately we are each responsible for ourselves. So that is something that's important to not overlook. We are responsible for ourselves, but we're not responsible for other people's actions. And so as a child, you're just innocent and you take and absorb whatever is told to you. So yeah. I think for my own children, I want them to know that they need to be, you know, good, upstanding people, but not that they're responsible for everyone else's actions. And I think I came by that naturally as well, just because my personality, like we talk about, just a people pleaser. So always looking past myself, which can be good, but to a fault. So.
Yeah. I get the people pleasing aspect. I have that part too, that I'm trying to overcome. Derek, did you grow up with that same teaching that women are responsible for men's, or protecting men from sinful thoughts?
No, I grew up in a Christian household, but not in this particular sect of, not really a denomination, but the Institute of Basic Life Principles that kind of promulgated a lot of the rules that we lay out in the book. Especially early on. But I also didn't have sisters, so I don't know exactly what the message was, even in our own church, like generally to women, because I really didn't know much about women until I got married, honestly.
Welcome.
Now we have marriage. All sons. So yeah, generally I'm like, I like this. I'm like the queen of the house here. This is great.
Yeah, boys. So I don't know what we would do with the daughter.
Yeah. Okay. So that wasn't really a prevalent for you. Okay, that's interesting. So what, Derek, would you say were messages that you got in your upbringing that maybe you've tried to or had to undo?
I don't know necessarily undo, but just from a male perspective, like growing up, we were taught that like it's our responsibility. You know, you're not just at the whim of someone else. So that might be a difference between.
You can't use it as an excuse.
Yeah, if you can't use it as an excuse, you can't say, well, I wouldn't have done this if she hadn't been doing that or whatever. Like, I still had to know what boundaries were important for myself to put into place to avoid certain pitfalls. But Joe was saying with responsibility, like, I knew that, you know, if I didn't want to have certain thoughts or whatever, that I probably shouldn't. Like if you're a drunk, not that I was like overly struggling with, but I'm saying like you shouldn't go past a bar. Like if you're worried as a teenager about doing certain things, like everyone's beliefs are different, but like my beliefs were, nope, I didn't want to sleep with anyone before I got married. So I knew, and it was taught in my household, like, well, I don't need to put myself in this situation, like with a girl who doesn't have those same convictions, because I don't know if I would be strong enough. So I need to take the effort to like not even get to that point.
Gotcha. So taking responsibility for your own actions, which is
right, yeah,
is really healthy. So it sounds like, though you both grew up in Christian households, the levels of, would you say, orthodoxy were very different, or is that accurate?
Well, like legalism, probably.
Okay. Western. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you started dating, I know, Jill, in the book, you mentioned that, you know, your first kiss, the goal is like first kiss over the altar. Was that mm-hmm. kind of your idea too, Derek, or?
No.
Had you kissed other women? Come on.
Yes, I had kissed other women. And I was open with Jill about that beforehand. Yeah. Like I knew I didn't want to hide anything. So obviously I don't think anyone, once they got to their wedding day, would be like, oh, like they wouldn't never have any regrets. Like obviously if you know who the person is from the very beginning, then you would do things different. So I don't think it was any different with me. Not that I, you know, did anything like terrible or anything like that.
Yeah.
And this is not confession, right?
I'm fine. This is things that I've shared before.
Our upbringings were different in that way, where I was very much like, felt like it would be sinning if I kissed before marriage, and it would be sinning if I did not follow the rules that were kind of laid out. And we were able to, when we were dating or courting, as we called it growing up, we were able to, as a couple, make our own rules, but then there were also extra rules that were kind of like laid on us or pressured.
One thing that was odd for me, the with Jill and I's early relationship, was Jill's dad had asked that I contact each of the women who I had kissed and apologize. So it was extremely awkward.
And did you do that?
You did it.
Yeah, I was like,
at the time, I was like, wow, that's like so, I didn't even know, I don't think until after we were married, but I was like, wow, that's so great or whatever.
But I mean,
but
I like Jill, but it was just,
but now I'm like, oh,
I got some interesting responses.
They were like, okay.
No, I'm not going to say. So anyway.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, just different cultures. Just different. Very different cultures.
I wasn't going to say what the response
is. I'm just saying go down the rabbit trail.
No.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talk in your book about strict gender constructs. Like, this is a man's job, man's role. This is a woman's.
Jill and I talk about this a lot. Yeah.
I bet. So and even Derek, your example, like that Jill's dad could tell you, a grown man, that you had to do something. Like, that's kind of.
And there were other things with
different.
Other stuff. Fill out like a 50-page questionnaire, like very detailed.
We ended up more than 50 pages. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the pages.
Oh, that's just
what
the questions.
He sent you with the questions to fill in the blanks. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, very protective.
Yeah. I was also the very first daughter to get married. So that probably was part of it. So
yeah,
I got a little bit of grace, my parents.
Yeah. So as your book goes on, you can see your strength growing, and then and you start setting boundaries, and then you meet Derek, and then you're really empowered to kind of set those boundaries. And what would you say to women who are just at the beginning stages of claiming their personal power over their life choices? I mean, that was such a long process for you. What advice would you give?
Yeah, so I definitely think it's a process, finding your voice, and especially when you're not really encouraged to do that. In the culture that I grew up in, independence is very discouraged overall. And so for us, as we started making decisions as our own family unit. And for those who don't know, I grew up the fourth born of 19 children. in the Duggar family. So yeah, I look to my parents a lot for their blessing and decision-making and everything. So as we decided to make decisions for our family and move away from reality TV show, my dad would say, as we say in our book, Counting the Cost, we say that it was kind of viewed as a ministry opportunity, like mm-hmm. this television thing. So the first time I told my parents no and like kind of stood my ground was we had been married for years. We already had our first child and we were headed in a different direction with our lives as a little family unit than the one that my parents had kind of laid out for us and just assumed that we would follow. So as we kind of paved our own path, it became very difficult for me because I realized I cannot please my parents and do what I feel like we're being called to do. And I think whenever it got really toxic is whenever I was almost forced to choose and I wouldn't have chose that. I wanted to please everyone still. That was my heart, but I was like, I can't. And if you're going to put me against my husband, I'm not going to pick you, you know, I'm going to pick my husband. We're going to join forces here. So I didn't want to be put in that position. But whenever I felt threatened that way, that's when push really came to shove. And I was like, okay, you're going to make me decide, then I'm going to take this next step and you may not like it. So finding my voice was then that was the start of the process. And then over the next several years, as we outline in the book, kind of there were a lot of really tough moments. But I would say to people who are either thrust into that position or they're thinking about it, really finding a support group is very essential in being able to set boundaries. Even if it's just like one or two friends that you can kind of confide in and people that you can text at midnight and say, pray for me, you know, whatever, like I'm really dealing with this hard time or whatever. A therapist, like that's been really helpful for us also finding somebody outside of the situation who can speak truth into our lives and not just finding yes people, not finding people that are just going to always agree with you, but people either where you want to be in a few years or that are a few steps ahead of you or where or in the trenches with you kind of thing, like different
phases of life. And then and kind of see it for what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Therapy has been huge for us. And we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I love that in the book. And I was just really impressed with your therapist and what you shared about your process. And I was like, I'm so grateful that you both found somebody who was really helpful and sound. And yeah, I just loved seeing like a peek into your process. I mean, being a therapist myself, that's my thing. So
yes. And I would say to that, I would say, if people are looking for a therapist and you don't jive with the first person that you meet who you're interviewing to be your therapist, like that's okay. It's kind of like searching for a physician, like go look somewhere else, try again, don't give up. So,
yeah, I say it's kind of like dating. Like you don't end up with, you know, people, everyone you date, you got to find the right one. So it's just a relationship like every other relationship. So
yeah,
I'm so glad that you found a good one. What would you say is the most important thing that you learned through the therapy process?
There's been so much. I think the thing that comes to mind first was just our therapist sharing with us, sometimes you have to be okay with other people not being okay. You also have to be okay with yourself not being okay sometimes. And that was really hard for me because I was so conditioned, and I think a lot of people are, to making sure everybody else is happy or thinking about yourself last. And not that we need to be this self-centered society where you're just only driven by thinking about yourself and protect yourself at all costs, because sometimes we do have to look after others first, but realizing
like putting on your own mask before you help others.
Yeah. But like realizing you can't always keep everybody happy. Cause I even had somebody reach out to me the other day on social media and they're like, hey, I've been reading your book. And, I'm feeling like I need to take some steps with my family to draw some hard boundaries. How do I do that and still keep a good relationship? And I'm like, well, that's
You would like to be able to do that.
You would love to be able to do that, but sometimes people are going to push back on those boundaries. And if they do and they don't respect them, then for a period of time, that may not always be where you land. Like you may not just have everything all rosy for the entire time that you're setting boundaries and people are pushing back. So anyway. Yeah.
I totally agree. What one of my sayings is, part of growing up is disappointing your parents.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's, you know, you're a grown up when you're willing to disappoint them and not, you know, not do exactly what they want, because they get to do their life, you get to do yours. And so well done. Well done growing up, you two. I love the part in the book where you wore pants for the first time and got your nose ring. I was cheering you on. Tell us more about like what that was like for you to kind of go against this very strict rule.
There's a whole lot there, but the first thing that came to mind whenever you were mentioning all that was what surprised me most. And I think there are certain things that surprised me most, but kind of it's indicative of like the whole culture. Mm-hmm. Because it was either your mom or your dad said, it wasn't even about what surprised me. It wasn't about the nose ring itself. It was like, well, you had to go into a tattoo parlor to get a nose piercing. It's not like you could just go to the mall. Like, it'd be one thing if you just went to the mall.
Players to the jewelry store.
It'd be one thing if you went to the jewelry store, but they just do ears. If you want a nose ring, you had to go to a tattoo parlor. And like the fact that you would like that, I was like, she wasn't even getting a tattoo. And I was like, just the fact that you're like there, it's like that just made it that much worse. And I was like, I would never have thought that would have been the
hang up.
Like one of the major drawbacks of something like that.
Yeah. So I think there were people, it was interesting whenever people were like, when I posted on Instagram myself, like a selfie of me with nose ring, people were like, oh my goodness, is it a nose ring? And I was scared still at the time to even address it.
Needles.
I'm saying like, yes, I don't like needles. But anyway, even whenever I did like go and get it done, I didn't want to make a big deal about it. I was literally getting the nose ring because I thought it was cute. And if I could have just skipped that initial phase of people's reactions,
we even talked about it before. Like, I'm like, yeah, sure, it sounds cute.
I was not looking for a reaction, because that was the thing. Whenever I posted online, some people were thinking, oh my goodness, she's doing this just to spite her parents or whatever. That was not my intentions at all. And in the book, I talk about that, like just kind of how it all played out. But yeah, like these things that I was, the things that we were talking about as a couple and starting to do, and like just feeling like, hey, it's okay to do this. And it's not sinful. And
it would just align with her style. Like, just, she's like, if you know Jill, she's like a boho hippie style.
Yeah, chick. I liked it. And so I was like, I don't think that this is wrong.
Yeah.
And the more we talked about it as a couple, I was like, okay, but should I consider other people's opinions in this? You know, because sometimes there is a place for deference and you don't always have to just do what you want to do and be selfish. But at the same time, I was like, no, I feel like this is fine. Like, I'm not trying to make a statement here or say something even about my parents' parenting style or whatever. Just be like, oh, I'm going to do this because of them or whatever and spite them. I was very much just like thinking about it, us talking about it, processing it as a couple, making our decision, hoping other people would be okay with it. And then, of course, not everybody was, but it was very much like while it was a very big deal in my upbringing to do something like this, it also was, when it came down to it, it was not a big deal. Like when we were talking about it, I mean, I definitely had to process it, but like, it was not like, okay, here's the day I'm doing this or whatever. It was just very, I don't know. Like,
just don't drive down the street and get one.
Yeah. Do so, it. And then
how old were you? How old were you when you decided to wear pants and get your nose ring?
27. Yeah. Cause I was 29.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was around the time our second son was born, maybe a year after that.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
And so you weren't trying to make a statement, but in a way, it sounds like it symbolized you self-defining. Like,
I was definitely not going to just cower and be afraid to make my own decisions by that point. I already like made decisions that were definitely more of a statement and saying something to my parents, but they were also behind closed doors. So this was an outward thing that I was afraid of how people would take it. I think that was one of the big concerns for me too, because I was still very much worried about that people's perception. And I was like, one of my biggest fears was like, I don't want them to think that I'm doing this just because I want to show my parents that I can do this. Like that was one of my concerns. And so I literally did not post about it. I didn't like, I talk about that in the book. Like the first time I wore pants, we went to an amusement park and I was afraid that people are going to see me, if people are going to take pictures, because people would come up to us all the time, recognize us and want to get pictures. And sure enough, that's what happened. So,
and I think what's unique about this culture and the IBLP is that it wouldn't have been any different whether she was 27 or 37 or 47. Like, it's a matter of like, you're subject to your parents, your father especially, for your whole life. And it doesn't matter if they don't give their blessing on you marrying a certain person when you're 50 even, and they're 80, then you're sinning and going against God's will by disobeying them.
Now, I will say we had left the show by then. We had just left the show. So in reality TV, you would be questioned about everything. Like, you had to replay your life like all the time. And so I am glad that we made that decision to quit the show when we did, because I think it would have been much harder and would have been even more drama with family surrounding our decisions if we
had. Which is saying a lot, because there's already a lot of drama.
Yeah.
It would have been worse if it were a year earlier.
Having it be broadcast to millions. And you have a lot of social media followers, so I'm sure they were talking about it.
At least I wasn't having to sit in an interview chair and
worse,
like,
because her dad wouldn't have wanted that to be a topic on the show at all. And then the producers very much would have wanted to highlight they would have wanted to film probably them.
And we probably would have been okay with it to some degree, but just having to navigate that on top of it, at least we could just kind of ride the wave on social media and not have to get in the middle of their production.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Derek, I'm curious, were you scared at all to court Jill because of kind of the IBLP kind of extreme beliefs? Was there a part of you that was like, I don't know if I can handle this?
I didn't know as much. I didn't know there's like as much like unspoken rules until after we got married. Yes. About things that, like, they're like technically not, I mean, not technically a sin per se, but like if you broke it down, everyone would consider it a sin.
For example, children.
Yeah. Or even wearing pants. My mom wears pants. And my in-laws, like Jim, Bob, and Michelle would say, oh, she's such a godly woman. Like, we love your mom. And I was like, she wears a business suit and she wears pants. Like, why is it so sinful? And when Jill, it was rumored like that, because her dad gets these Google alerts, like whenever their family name is in the news, and there's, because we hadn't even said anything, but it's like, hey, like her dad pulled her aside and we were over there. Again, we got like multiple children at this point, and says, hey, you know, heard you're wearing pants, you know, and gave her a book on why it's not good to wear pants. Like, gave her a book. I'm like, you need to read this and realize why you don't need to be wearing pants. And you need to read this, mom.
Like we say in the book, counting the cost.
We go into more detail in the book, counting the cost. But I was like, that's at odds with like my mom, who's been a Christian, wonderful Christian lady for over 50 years. And they're like singing her praises. But I'm like, well, she's doing the same thing that like Jill's doing, but it's wrong when Jill does it. So a lot of these are like almost like unspoken rules I had to figure out. Like, but in the beginning, like, I wouldn't say I was scared, because I was like, I was asked questions about my choice in music, and her dad just, I didn't know this at the time, but Jill told me that her dad said, you need to talk to Derek about his choice in music. And I think you said, well, I don't even know what my convictions are on that.
Yeah. It was one of those like less obvious ones that it wasn't going to like hurt his reputation, because usually when you're listening to music, it's like you know, you're listening. It's not like you're
not something you're wearing on TV or something.
Mm.
So with that, it was one of those times I think Derek could see that things I didn't agree with my parents on, and we could be our own family. Now, a lot of things I did agree with my parents on, and but as I studied scripture more and was more removed from that group of people, I was able to kind of think for myself and kind of reprocess some things and talk about it with Derek and our church. Like, we went to a different church than my family when we got married, and all of that was super helpful. And I knew that some of this stuff was going to need to be like things that I prayed about personally and read scripture and got wise counsel on, but it ended up being interesting that I did not, I didn't know the things that I was going to really have issue with were going to be those things that I ended up coming to different conclusions on. Like, I was thinking, oh, music. Okay, whatever. Like, that might be something that I disagree with my parents on, or things like that. But Derek and I did talk extensively though about our views on things. And I was grateful that if he didn't have an opinion on something, that he would say, I don't know, like, let's study it together. And that kind of, so that kind of comforted me, like, hey, we can work through this together too, some of this stuff. But it wasn't like I was set out to change him entirely or he was going to change me. So that part allowed me not to be as scared. And I think probably you too. Some.
But I think kind of from a cynical perspective, like, early on, that's one of the things that in talking to her dad, really, like, in the way he would differentiate between which things were important, which things were not important. And a lot of the things that were important were the things that were outward and other people could see. The things that he didn't care so much about, like, we might be fine having different points of view and practicing things differently if it was something that was not as public, made me very cynical about the whole, like, set of rules and the whole culture. Because it's like, how genuine can you be if you're totally fine with it, not totally fine with it, but you're less not fine with it if it's something that, like, other people aren't going to see and it's going to undermine your authority among other people. Like, if it's more public, then it's like, oh, this is going to undermine my authority with regard to other people if they can see that my daughter and son-in-law aren't living consistently.
He's going to have to answer for it.
I'm going to have to answer for it. Thing. So it made me think that it's made me wonder whether or not it was all about him and how he was viewed in his own pride and all those things. But anyway, so that's kind of like one of the eye-opening things and kind of shifts that I made at that point.
Yeah. So interesting. So did you watch the show, Derek, before you met Jill? Did you know
who she was
and kind of what her family was like?
We grew up in the same area. So I knew when her dad was, like, in politics and was aware of the show. And I don't know, like, watched probably a couple episodes at some point.
But you weren't like, you didn't have all my siblings. You weren't one of those people that comes up and is like, hey, I know all your names. Josh, you don't know this. Like,
no, I lived in Northwest Arkansas and I was, like, aware of, like, pop culture in general. Like, I wasn't living in the rock, basically. Like,
You were aware, but not like a huge fan of the show I'm going to marry one of those Duggar daughters. No.
He did say something like that at one point, allegedly.
Oh, really?
To a friend after he met us. Like, he came, some girls in his church group or whatever were like, he was back from college and they came Christmas caroling at our house. I remember a group of people and you just remember coming to our house. Like, we didn't remember meeting each other. That was technically the first time we met, but
they were watching. I was at a church friend's house. Again, it's more, the audience is more like for women, I feel like, especially young girls, like preteen girls from
the reality show.
The reality show, like from events like a book signing.
Counting.
Yeah. But they were watching it at their house and then they were like big fans. So they're wanting to go Christmas caroling to her family's house.
Yeah. So that was like the first time we met and
not really met because we.
No, we didn't even meet. Yeah. But like, he came with a group.
Crossed paths.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we joke even about times before that we may have crossed paths. And I realized it because I was in Boy Scouts growing up and her family was in politics. And we always did a lot of the political events So I'm like, maybe at some point we crossed paths and didn't realize it. So that's kind of cool thinking about.
Don't know.
That is really cool.
We had to go to Nepal to meet. So yeah, met in Nepal.
Which again is interesting, not to go down another rabbit trail, but whenever you're 8,000 miles away from each other, you know, it's not, there's not a whole lot of physical aspects to your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to talk about
slightly more difficult.
You have to talk about something if you're 8,000 miles away, which in my opinion, I would think, not that I was trying to do anything, but I was thinking if you're worried about chaperones and always being really technical and your rules about who's what age.
Because my family was.
Yeah, because this is how kind of it was physically once I returned from Asia. I would think as like getting into being a parent myself, like you'd be almost more concerned about the influence someone would have in like just visiting with someone and talking with someone for 5.5 hours. Again, not that I was trying to like brainwash Jill or anything, but I was like, it was nice that we could talk for like hours and hours and hours and hours in our early relationship without other people listening in. So like, that was nice.
I bet that was no cameras, no
and have
recording devices. Yeah.
And the cameras came occasionally, but
yeah,
but not all the time.
But our first two conversations were 5.5 hours. So there's 11 hours on Skype.
Oh, wow.
And shortly after we.
But the first time we met in person, the camera was there. The entire first week, the cameras were there. So that was
We had already talked for hours and hours and hours before that. Yeah. So that was helpful.
Yeah, I bet. Instead of just, hi, I'm Jill. I'm Derek. Hi. Oh, I mean,
I kind of felt that again.
It's like everything comes in. And then my friends were like, what if you've never actually seen this woman, have you? Like, what if she's not real?
Oh, yeah, they're all making the jokes.
It's an AI. You know? Oh, that would be funny. Oh, my goodness. Well, you've definitely not had the average courtship and marriage experience, I would say, right? Having the cameras, you know, following you.
But it's the 21st century. My mom met her husband on eHarmony, so I never expected that. Yeah.
There you go. I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about parenting. Congratulations on your beautiful family, your three boys. I was really touched after your second son, when you had so many health challenges and you were coming to terms with the fact like this might be our family.
Mm-hmm.
That really struck me because I'm from a large family, not 19, but 9, which is, I think, is still really big.
Yeah.
Big. Still pretty big.
You have 9 or you're 1 of 9?
I'm 1 of 9. I have 4.
What
have
number 4. Are you? This is what's most important.
I'm the second, but so there's 3 girls at the top and I'm the second, but I took the role more of the oldest.
Okay.
So I was I took care of a lot of children too.
I was going to say, I'm going to be helpful. So
okay.
Number 4. So the anytime I'm like, but girl. I am the second girl. So like,
yeah. Okay, well, there you go.
There we go.
Numbers of children was for me personally was a stressful thing. There was kind of unspoken pressure, I think, but I can't imagine what it was like for you coming from a family of 19 and having it be so much pressure to think, I might have 2 kids. I mean, what was that like for you?
Yeah. So in the book, I talk about, like you're saying, that shift of going from really feeling that pressure of having to be okay with having a lot of children and that being the belief system that I grew up in, to then having to shift and be like, wait, do I like trusting God with the number of children that I'm supposed to have could also mean trusting him if he doesn't give us, you know, like 20 kids or whatever.
Yeah.
So making that shift and then just thinking, oh my goodness, am I being punished for my lack of desire to have 20 kids? Like all of those mind games that you play.
Mm-hmm. Another toxic aspect of this culture.
Yeah.
BLP, but
just that whole gamut of.
It really sets up a hierarchy. Question. Like you're less than if you have less kids, which is
right.
Harmful.
Yeah. So like Yeah, it's unintentional, I think, in a lot of ways. But when you say that children are a blessing from the Lord, which they are, children are a blessing from the Lord. Mm-hmm. But
even your parents have said, whoever has the most kids gets the house. Like, even comments like that.
Stuff like that.
But even jokes, like, you know, it's like half joking.
Like, what if, you know, somebody can't have kids or whatever. And anyway, just having to like really process that and thinking about it. And then at one point, a comment being made, like, where I'm talking with a friend at the hospital and she's, you know, I was very hush hush about it at first because our second child also had some health concerns and I wanted to make sure we were past those until
for his sake. Yeah.
Yeah. For his sake.
Yeah.
And make sure we were in the clear before I even said anything because I didn't want that to be on him, that like weight on him.
Fodder for reality TV.
Anything. Once you're a public figure and you're like in the spotlight, everybody's always looking for something. So I wanted to make sure we were in the clear there too until I talked about it. So at one point I'm talking, and we go into this in the book, but talking with a friend of mine and just saying, hey, like she was asking how I was doing postpartum, and I was kind of like saying, yeah, this was before I had seen a specialist and everything, and just saying, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to have any more kids.
A fertility specialist.
Yeah. And you know, so she's listening to that. And then my dad pipes up and he's kind of like, well, we don't really know yet, do we now? And he's just kind of like trying to control the conversation. And to me, it was less about that moment. I mean, yes, that moment was big and was kind of like, ouch. But it was more about just the overall.
This isn't about your feelings, mindset, what you think should be about.
And in that culture of like, oh, we can't, like, everybody has to kind of be in the same space and have this mindset of having all these kids. And we can't really talk about challenges like this, especially on this platform, this level that we're on of public figures and everything. It's going to destroy this idea and this.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was going to say, like, what was frustrating to me in that moment was like this idea still that he was like a gatekeeper for our information. Like, no, let's just be careful. Like, we don't know that yet. Let's be careful what we say to other people. You know, I was like, if we want to whatever extent we want to share with people, we're going to share with people.
I think there was that boundary line was, we didn't really have it in place. It was just kind of,
it's like our,
We will make decisions for our family. Yeah, therapist always tells us. We get to make decisions for our family.
Other people, whether or not we share something about our lives and our health situation.
Right. Yeah, I'm just so proud of you. Like, the therapist in me is like, way to set boundaries, way to go. And I love how you don't have to be disrespectful about it. You don't have to.
I didn't say anything to my dad in that moment either.
But eventually you got there, right?
Well, I better not right now.
In the book, it's more like from a retrospective point of view, like, here's what we were feeling and here's how that landed in that moment with all the other stressors at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was cheering you both on as you were setting those smaller boundaries. Mm-hmm. With shooting and with, you know, just with the cameras, and it's like, okay, good. Way to go. So the therapist in me was cheering you on. Hi friends. This podcast went a lot longer than a normal podcast length. So I decided to divide it into two different podcasts. So subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss the second half that we'll publish a little bit later. And if you join my group coaching membership, you'll get immediate access to part two of this incredible podcast. And I'll give you the month free with the code Jill, J-I-L-L. So go to drjuliehanks.com/membership, put in the code Jill for a free month, and you'll get immediate access to part two. Are you enjoying this podcast? Let me offer you more support and the chance to connect with other like-minded women with a Latter-day Saint background. Join my group coaching. You will be seen, heard, and you'll find a welcoming group of women. And you'll get coaching from me around topics that matter most to you. To join my group coaching, go to drjuliehanks.com/membership today and use the code podcast to get your first month free. Come try it out. Let's support each other and grow together. You are not alone. We're waiting for you. Have you ever thought, hey, I want to talk to Dr. Julie Hanks about this question? Well, now's your chance. I want to have you on my podcast. So email hello@drjuliehanks.com with your question and the reason why you want to be on the podcast. And we may just choose you for a free coaching session.